Now what happened was that the Tantra, the Indian Tantra, Indian Buddhist Tantra, took over quite a number of these rites. It didn't take them over in their crude magical form. Just took over, as it were, the symbolism. Gave the rites its own spiritual, Buddhistic meaning. And among other things, associated these rites of various kinds with different Buddha families. All the different Buddhas, Bodhisattvas and so on are organized into different groups according to certain spiritual affinities, which are known as Buddha families. For instance, there's the Vajra family, there's the Jewel family, there's the Lotus family. And we find that some of these rites came to be particularly associated with certain of these Buddha families. And we find further that each rite, each of the important rites at least, came to be regarded as symbolizing or embodying a certain kind of activity. Not worldly activity, but what we can only describe as spiritual activity, even transcendental activity. That is to say, the activity of the enlightened mind, the activity of Buddhahood. Because we find in the Tantra, there is the conception, or perhaps we should say experience, of enlightenment not as something passive, not as something static or inert, not something into which you just sink and it receives you. In the Tantra, there is the conception of enlightenment as essentially, as it were, active, as it were almost vibrating, as it were radiating in all directions, as active in all directions, even as dynamic, as expressing itself in various ways, in the form of various activities. So we find that in the Tantra, in the Indian Buddhist Tantra, the rite of destruction, for instance, the old magical rite of destruction, symbolizes the enlightened mind's activity or function of destroying ignorance. Your real enemy is ignorance. So in the context of tantric practice, the rite of destruction assumes the meaning of destroying ignorance. And one of the principal functions of the enlightened mind is to destroy ignorance. And then again, the rite of fascination symbolizes the activity or function of charming the hearts of all living beings. According to this way of looking at things, enlightenment, Buddhahood, the one mind, is not only truth, is not only reality, is not only the supreme good, is also the supremely attractive object. It's what everybody really desires, whether they know it or whether they don't. So the enlightened mind, as it were, exercises on all living beings a sort of unparalleled fascination. You get this aspect of the enlightened mind, or this aspect of reality, elaborated very much in some forms of Hinduism, in Sufism too, in Neoplatonism, the absolute as beauty, an absolute beauty, a pure beauty, a beauty that attracts through all things all living beings, so that when one is attracted, as it were, by something beautiful, whether something in nature or whether something in art, what you're really being attracted by is the one transcendental beauty, as it were, of which all these particular beauties are reflections. So the rite of fascination represents something of that sort. The rite of fascination elevated, as it were, to the level of Buddhahood, to the level of the enlightened mind, and made to symbolize the enlightened mind's power of fascination over all living things. And then again, the rite of prospering. This symbolizes another activity, another function of the enlightened mind. Its capacity to develop, to mature, to bring to spiritual maturity the fact that it is encouraging, as it were, all the apparently unenlightened minds to grow in its own direction.